Folks, and thank you so much for tuning in to another week of Dan's Dabble and Babble. My producer can confirm that I am thrilled to the gills to welcome this week's guest. It is someone that I have an autograph of that I have described as my prized possession. I tell the story of the autograph in the interview, so I won't go too much more into that. But today we're talking to Olympic bronze medalist Justin Spring. Now, Dennis, is it fair to say that I went through a bit of a Justin Spring kick in my youth?
I would say you sprung for spring.
I sprung for spring. Or
you appreciate Justin Spring just as much as any other critical eye would of the fine sport of men's gymnastics.
The only person who might give me a run for my money is his mother, Debbie Spring, who's also very near and dear to my heart because she was instrumental in me getting the autograph.
She was kind of the initial setup to this podcast.
Really? You make a good point.
We wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for Justin Spring's mother. So thank you, Mrs. Spring.
Thank you, Mrs. Spring. This is an episode 12 years in the making. So without further ado, here's my babble with Justin Spring. All right, folks, faithful listeners, thank you for coming back for a third week here at Dan's Dabble and Babble. This week, it is my distinct honor. I could not be more excited to welcome certainly our most athletically gifted and flexible guest that we've had. We're speaking this week to Olympic medalist, head coach of the University of Illinois Men's Gymnastics Program, and former proactive spokesperson. Joining us this week is Mr. Justin Spring. Justin, how are you this evening?
I'm good. I love how the proactive piece makes the intro. That's right under Olympic medalist, proactive spokesperson.
Well, that was going to be my first question is right after letting people know, reminding people that you're an Olympic medalist, I assume that you're also whipping out a proactive sales pitch.
I am not. That ship sailed long ago. It's funny. They called me a couple years ago and they were like, hey, if we're going to keep running your ad, we have to ensure you're still using the product. So like, can we ship? And I was like, nah, we're just going to be done with that, man. So we're done. That was a lifetime ago.
Well, hey, that's still a distinct honor that not many get to have. I mean, there's certainly more people that have Olympic medals than have been proactive spokespeople, I would say. So I'm not sure which one you're more proud of, but it's certainly up there. So again, thank you so much for joining. I do want to kind of start by sharing a story that goes back to 2008, the year that you competed in the Olympics, just to kind of give the listeners some backstory of why I'm so excited to speak with you, other than the opportunity to speak with such an accomplished gymnast and a great person. But I have been a longtime fan of gymnastics, and in 2008, I compiled a little highlight video of Justin and uploaded it to YouTube, and get an email one day from, it turns out it was Justin's parents, asking for a copy of the highlight video that I had put together. And my response was, absolutely, I can burn you a copy of the DVD. Would it be too much to ask for me to give it to you in exchange for an autograph, which your parents had actually offered to pay for the DVD? I said, no, don't pay me, but I do want an autograph though. And you were kind enough to send an autograph. So it's kind of surreal to finally be able to sit down and just chat with you a little bit. And thank you once again for the autograph that I've still got hanging in my office wall.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just count on Debbie Spring to reach out to try to get, I still remember the day they were geeking, you know, in 2008 after the games, and you know, they've saw me go through so many injuries and things like that. I think it was surreal for them, whereas I was just focused on doing my job. They were kind of living vicariously through me and really enjoying the 08 and beyond. So that was, yeah, that's no surprise. They reached out. They put together some cool stuff afterwards for me because I never would have done it. And now I'm like, oh, it's awesome that I have that. And so that's one of the things is your video, because it captured some good footage that I know it's crazy to think, but it's like everything is captured in video now. But back in a short 12 years ago, it wasn't. It's kind of crazy how we've come so far. Like I try to find old videos of my training and competing, and there's not that many. You know, it's only at the big meets, USA Championships or something. But I would die. I would kill for some great training footage, just messing around in the gym. We just don't have it. We don't have it. Like my guys are recording every day, and you know, they probably have gigs and gigs of highlighted skills, and they could, you know, I have none. So I'm like, it's nice. Appreciate you doing it, Dan.
Absolutely. No, I know it was a fun little project that I just did kind of on a whim one afternoon, but it's just funny kind of reflecting on that we had a digital copy of this, but that those were still the days where you wanted to burn everything onto physical media to have as the backup.
Only way you could save it, right?
It's exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's just wild that it's like, I mean, my computer doesn't even have a DVD drive anymore. I would never be able to send your parents a DVD.
Where would one put a DVD now? I guess you have a PlayStation or something, right? Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what, well, and even that I would have to hook it up specifically just for the DVD player. And even yeah. Gaming systems are getting rid of the discs now. So you hang on to that DVD and make sure you always have a DVD player.
Make sure I always have a disc drive in my new computer. Yeah.
As I've got to relive the highlight reel from that one thing that kid made that one time. I'm sure you're just watching that all the time, but
it's like my every Wednesday, man. For sure.
Good. I would expect nothing less.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine, you just mentioned your mom, Debbie. I mean, parents love to brag about their children when they have no accomplishments. So I cannot even imagine the level of pride that your parents have of having you as a son going to Beijing, watching you compete in the Olympics. That's absolutely out of this world. So Debbie deserves all the stories, all the bragging rights for raising an Olympic gymnast.
I totally will tell her. She will totally remember. So
yeah, no, such a fun little moment. But one of the reasons why I really wanted to talk to you on this is to kind of bring awareness to the state of gymnastics in 2021 now. And everything that we've kind of gone through in 2020 with COVID and the threat that has posed to some men's gymnastics programs, some really big men's gymnastics programs. I know you were very vocal at the start of COVID when everything was very uncertain for the future of the sport. So just kind of talk to us a little bit, I guess, about where we are now compared to back in March, April, when, you know, it was difficult to even get into the gym, and when the future of programs were uncertain. Just kind of what's been going on in the world of gymnastics in the face of COVID?
Well, you'd have to go back a lot longer than just this year to understand why we're in the situation we're in. You know, it was funny, I was on the phone with the software developer that developed our virtual meet streaming platform for this year in preparation for anything. We didn't know if we're going to have in-person meets. Right. So, and we had a long chat about, and he's like, I've just heard a lot of things throughout the years that, you know, I've pushed a lot of initiatives to try to position gymnastics in a better place for survival. Right. Like, you know, if you have a simple line graph of amount of programs left in the country for men's gymnastics in college, it's a bad trend. It's going straight down, and a nice consistent line. And that's a problem, right? And I think it a little bit is the changing climate of athletics, but it's also, I think, a failure of men's gymnastics to position itself in a way to simplify it, just to be cool. Like, we're not cool like we were back in the Kurt Thomas days. And,
sorry to interrupt, but I'm so glad that you brought up Kurt Thomas, because I was going to jump in, because Kurt Thomas, of course, went to Indiana State University.
That's right.
I'm a fourth generation.
Stroke, man. Just crazy.
I'm a fourth generation Sycamore. Indiana State University alumni, we don't even have a gymnastics program anymore. And I mean, we had a program that developed someone, put someone out like Kurt Thomas. And for a program like ours to die when it did in the 80s is just really, really alarming to me. So I've kind of been...
They've all died, right? They've all died. That, you know, and so, I mean, and that's the thing, right? Success doesn't matter. You just got to look at when UCLA cut their men's program. They literally fielded the almost the entire Olympic team in what is like in 80 or 84. And then they just cut the program.
Yeah. It's
they're like, wow, you won the NCAA national championship, fielded the entire Olympic team, take a hike later, you know? And that was just the, that was, we're just cumbersome, right? And the sad thing is we're cumbersome in a lot of ways that many of the Olympics men's sports are, but in some ways that I think is really devastating, you know, for our cause. And it's facility needs, you know, you need a permanent 10, 12,000 square foot setup that's exclusively for men's gymnastics, because you got pits and mats and our equipment that's like cable strapped to anchored to the floor. Like it just, you can't just like a wrestling team. They use the weight room that everyone else uses, and then they roll their mat up at the end of the day and throw it in the corner of the gym that everyone else can use. Like, so, you know, and so for Title IX numbers at wrestling, is worse on their bigger teams. They make up for it in what has now been a really, I think, a resurgence of popularity in wrestling. Like they never died in the high school system. Their NCAA championships is prominently featured on ESPN, packed Madison Square Garden over the last like 3 years. I mean, they've done some amazing changes, and some of the changes I've tried to push for men's gymnastics, and we've dug our heels in, and we like traditional old school gymnastics. And I'm like, have you seen what that's done for us? It's just, we've just been dying. So I've just been real frustrated with it, because my vision for gymnastics, it almost starts to not look like gymnastics, which is why I think no one really wants to jump on board. But I just think there are still some things we could do to make gymnastics popular and exciting to watch on a TV, you know, in a TV and television televised format, and which, you know, that's where the money's coming from. And that's where you really gain your audience. You know, I don't know any volleyball, women's volleyball team that makes money they might break even, but what they have is incredible viewership on television and starting to be in person fans. Like they sell at our arena all the time for our women's volleyball team. So they're doing something right. They went to rally point scoring, and that was a huge change to make it simplified, faster paced, and TV friendly. And they're killing it for it. And we've done the opposite. Our meets are longer. They're more cumbersome. They're harder to follow. And I'm like, I give up. I'm like, what are we doing? What are we doing?
And that's such a good point too, because I mean, obviously the best case scenario is you start bringing in money, and then you don't really have that much to worry about, because you're able to justify based on the money that you're bringing in. But even just getting the platform and getting the viewership to your sport, so that there's awareness ahead of time, because I think this is one of those scenarios where it's really something that's taken for granted. And I mean, I'm sure like when University of Illinois is competing in nationals for the NCAA meet, that there's some energy around that and some nice news stories for a while when you take home a title. But then when the programs go to the wayside, it's kind of like, oh, well, that's really sad. But if people aren't engaged ahead of time, then there's no way to stave that off.
And I think that's what's the pandemic's been good in that sense. Like there was a 60 Minutes episode featuring what's happening here. And I think, you know, if nothing else, the pandemic has kind of exposed college athletics for, you know, in a problematic light, or not a problematic light, but in a new light, where just kind of what kind of people have always said, you know, there's big money changing hands for football and basketball and TV contracts. And I believe in my heart that this was like, you know, we talked about earlier, your brothers tell me you know, you're coaching the local high school team. Like college athletics was basically that, you know, it was like the intramurals, and the stinking kinesiology professor was also the men's gymnastics coach on the side. So he'd teach and then he'd show up for practice. Right. And like, that was a model that worked, and then money got involved and we've reaped the benefits of that. Don't get me wrong. We get paid a great salary. We travel on nice buses and we fly across the country and have been able to compete like that for 10 years. But because we've gone down that road now, and then there's been pressure put on the system, it's like, well, we can't keep supporting the teams like that. So we can't renege on what we've done. We're just going to cut them. it seems
right. No. And you bring up such a great point there. And that's a point that I've tried to make, kind of being on the other side, on the faculty side of all of this. There's so much focus on athletics that it really kind of starts to put into the question of what is a university really for? And kind of to your point, what are university athletics really for? And when they become these programs that are just so expensive to maintain, and then a university falls on hard times, which is inevitably going to happen. I mean, everything comes in cycles. Then you start looking at these programs that you have on your books that you start to see as just an expense. And then once they're gone, they're gone. I mean, it's hard to get these things.
And that's what kills me about the Minnesota and Iowa drop is, so their problem operating, you know, their budget, full operating budgets, salaries include everything all in, was like $800,000, mm-hmm. Maybe a million.
Right.
And that's a lot. That's a lot of money yearly. But you're looking at, you know, I think Minnesota's looking at like a $60 million deficit. So in the grand scheme of thing, that's 1/60th of the money they needed to get back. And you've eliminated those opportunities. But at the same time, you know, they weren't given the opportunity to say, look, we can still be a viable and competitive team at half that. We spend that because we've been in the Big Ten. We've been in this cash flush, you know, environment, and you've been gracious enough to give us these opportunities, but like, we don't need them. We can remain viable and competitive with half of what you've given us. And they weren't given the opportunity because we're in the Big Ten Conference. We need to maintain this level of support. And this, so it's like, we kind of almost grew to a level to where we don't allow you to operate, you know, with a shoestring budget, because that's not how we're allowed to do things at the big conference. And it's like, so it's better to cut opportunities. And that's what really, really hurt my heart. And it's like, I thought that's what really it was all about, right? Like, we got in here because everyone, you know, every man and woman that has a kid growing up, I got three of my own, like, I want them to have an opportunity to do their sport or their concentration, whether it's playing violin or tumbling, and have an opportunity to do it in a really cool forum. It doesn't need private jets and Nike sponsorships, but it, like, it'd be cool to have an affiliation and have a scholarship to be able to play that sport. I don't need private jets. I don't need meal plans. I don't need a night, you know, like, and that's where I think it gets really hard, because you've got these contracts set up and you can't renege and say, well, everyone gets this except for the men's gymnastics team. And so we're almost contract bound. Right. And that's where we're at. So it's been amazing. So as I look back 5 years ago, just loving life, and we got all these opportunities. And even from when I competed at the University of Illinois, I look at what they have now and I'm like, we didn't get half this stuff. What a time to be, you know, a Division I athlete. And then I'm like, yeah, but we're dropping programs left and right because of that.
Right, exactly. It's ballooned to such a complex problem. And so I am kind of curious to, I mean, when you see programs in your own conference dropping, I mean, what does that do for the level of competition that even you're able to even partake in? I mean, when you've got programs like Minnesota and Iowa that are no longer there to host a meet or to be at the Big Ten Championships.
Well, they are this year. So this is the last awesome year. You know, pending a miracle, Iowa and Minnesota are done after this year. You have to have a minimum of 6 to maintain your conference championship. So with 2 programs, we're down to 5 in the conference. We were at 7. So like, I'm very sad when I think about it. I went through, my wife is kind of wandering around the background here. She saw me at some really low times, like personally feeling for my guys, my athletes. Just, I'm working with USA Gymnastics on like some like subcommittees trying to figure out what is the next conduit towards high level gymnastics in this country, because the feeder programs have been these college teams, and that's just even maybe one or four athletes on a team. I'm looking at the opportunity from all 20 guys. The guy that just made it as a walk on, this is his dream come true, and like that is the carrot at the end of the stick that's drawing these kids out of the high school programs. Like, maybe I can just earn a spot on one of these teams. And I'm just like, and then I look at my son who's 8 and I'm like, what, you know, he might be tall. And so we might have an issue with gymnastics being a problem, but his sport, I don't know what he's going to, if it's not football and basketball, I don't know what he's going to do. Right. Like, and that's where I get sad that this is a bigger problem. Every person that has a son and even a daughter for that matter, if you're not playing volleyball or, you know, women's basketball, like they're going to start getting, we're just getting started on what's getting chopped, because there's legal cases that are going through that they're only going to add pressure to tens of millions of dollars worth of financial pressures from COVID. So this is not getting any better anytime soon. This is only going to get worse.
No,
so
of course.
I'm not excited for what 5 years from now looks like in college athletics.
Yeah. And I mean, you make such a salient point, because I mean, there are of course people that are playing college athletics, like football, basketball, using that to kind of catapult themselves to a professional league, hopefully. But for a lot of people, even in those big sports, but in the smaller sports as well, that is kind of the dream growing up, is playing at the Olympic collegiate game. Level. Exactly.
That's it. And it feels that way for them. And they're on a team training together, and it teaches them far more than life skills than you'll ever learn in a leadership class from your RST program. Like, because you're living it, you're in it day to day. There's no better educator than a team dynamic with values and that grind every day in practice. And it really molds great young men and women, right? You know, and so that's it. It's one of the best classrooms you can really have is a really high functioning, very focused athletic sports team. It's tremendous in that capacity. And I think we've overlooked the education of that piece, in my opinion.
No, you're spot on. I was a cheerleader at Indiana State, and it's just such a cool experience to be part of college athletics. And when you start taking those opportunities away to support the big programs, you're dampening the experience that surrounds it for so many people. And I mean, the number of times that I find a way to bring up that I was a Division I athlete because I was on the cheer team at Indiana State, going back to you flaunting your bronze medal, I mean, I can only imagine. But it's one of those things that someone can never take away from you, and if you don't even have the opportunity to do that, it's just such a magical thing that's such short lived that it's really sad to see it in the state.
People, I get guys that go through job interviews, the seniors as they're, you know, getting ready to exit into life, and they're amped about the interview. They come back and they tell me, they're like, all they asked was like my experience on the team, like what are the learning, and we talk about this, like my team culture is really important to me, and like they're like, I crushed the interview just because of the experience and the time I've had here with the program and the team. Like, I felt so well versed in that meeting, and they're just like, thank you. And I'm like, that's what it's about. That, like, that guy, like, you don't get that from a classroom.
No, you're absolutely spot on. And I mean, that's really one of those intangibles that it's hard to quantify, that kind of a thing. But it is, it's something that makes you stand out. It makes you interesting, and it makes your university distinctive when you're producing people that are part of those programs as well. So I think it's really sad that, to know kind of how universities function and how short-sighted they can be, when they're making these decisions. All right. Now I do want to shift gears, just a little bit here. That's been, a great conversation, but kind of, traveling down a depressing road. So if we can lighten the mood a little bit here, doing research like a professional host, I read through your Wikipedia page and I just saw something that, really made me laugh, and I had to ask you about. There's, with a citation on your Wikipedia page, it says that you have earned the nickname Prince due to your resemblance to Prince Harry. Are you aware of this nickname?
Yeah, that came up in 08, and no one has ever called me Prince, ever, except for the one person that made that connection in 08 and decided to put it on my Wikipedia page or put it in on an article. So they had this one photo of our heads tilted the exact same way, and there was some reddish tint in my hair. So like, all right, it played, but no, that's not been like a long life nickname at all. There was a slight resemblance.
Well, that is incredible. I am sure you're royalty in Champaign, Illinois. So I would take it and use it.
I do. I feel like I got to comment on that. I do. Champaign's a really cool college town. I've so thoroughly enjoyed being a coach and being training and making an Olympic team with the University of Illinois support. It's been a pillar in my life. It's been awesome. So I do feel somewhat of a celebrity, not like our football or basketball coach, but enough to where some nice old lady at the supermarket was like, "Hey, coach, great win last weekend." And I'm like, "That's awesome, man." Because our guys get it too. I think again, that's such a powerful piece of college athletics. I love it to death.
No, it is, and that's so cool to kind of have that full circle moment of training at the University of Illinois, and then having the opportunity to come back on the coaching staff and then become the head coach has got to be so rewarding. Wow. on so many different levels.
But don't call me Prince. That's not my nickname.
Fair enough. Now, yeah. I do want to ask you. You mentioned that you have these ideas that you feel like you're going in the opposite direction. So I want to hear about some of your ideas to make gymnastics more TV friendly and kind of what you envision gymnastics becoming. And kind of on that thread, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that my idea for this is just start every gymnastics meet with a clip of your dismount from the high bar and the team all around from 2008. Because that triple back dismount where you stick the landing is permanently tattooed in my brain. And not everybody gets as jazzed about gymnastics in its current form as I do. But I mean, that's you've got a solid viewer of one if that's how you start every program. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on
you're onto something, right? So like, you know, like that, how do you capture the those big moments in gymnastics? And that is, I think, forever been the problem with our sport, is there's never a win, right? Like it's the big stuck dismount and then everything in between, like release moves on high bar, eye catching and exciting, but like you're watching a pommel horse routine or parallel bars or rings, you can be like, that strength is crazy, but like, I don't know, was it good? Like, is it going to score a 16-2? Like, I don't know. And if it does, I don't even know what that means. So like, right. The Tenno gave some sense of what a big win was. When someone got a 9-9 or even a 10 back in the day, you could get it. And that was a win. That was a moment where it was like something big just happened. We all cheered together. Really exciting. I'm glad I was a part of that. We've lost all of that. We have none of that now. We have one of those at the end of a 2 hour plus production when we announce which team won, because that's it. And it's like, that's ridiculous.
Right. And the way the rotations are, it does make it really hard to watch as someone who just has kind of a casual association with gymnastics, because understanding that like vault is a high scoring event versus rings is going to be,
you know your stuff.
So you have no idea really where the teams are standing because you can't compare an event to it.
Even I do. Like even I'm an expert right in this, and I sit there with my coaches in postseason meets with six teams on the floor, the six ring cluster that's going on, and I'm trying to. All right, so they got us by 3 points. Oh, but they're going to pommel horse. Typically, you know, and like wait, we're 5 points ahead of them, but they're going to vault, so they could be right there with us or even pass. Like it takes. Three experts, 10 minutes to figure out if we're in this thing, five rotations into six, right? And it's like, this is a problem, people. This is not sporting event. This is not what this should look like. And so my pitch and my assistant coach, Daniel Ribeiro, and I, you know, spent hours developing the mechanisms to actually make this work. And, you know, the kind of more traditionalists in the sport were just shot it down and killed it rather than being like, this is onto something. How can we make this work? Because it absolutely could work. And it's not earth shattering. They do it in golf. They do it in tennis. Like it's simply a head-to-head matchup play, single point system. So Iowa puts a guy on floor. He does his full routine, judged with all the stupid stuff behind the scenes. I put my guy on floor. They'd get judged and do all that behind the scenes. Whoever has the highest score wins. They win 1 point. Point Illinois. If you don't know anything else after that matchup, the crowd can be excited that Illinois won the damn point. And that's what you need. And that's a touchdown moment, right? Like that's awesome. And then anyone that comes in the middle of the damn event can look up at the scoreboard and go, oh man, we're killing them. It's 10-2, you know, or it's a close match. It's 8-7. You don't have to know anything else, but like that creates a follower. Like you can follow that.
Well, I've got to imagine even for the athletes that would have benefits too, right? Of if you're the fifth guy going on floor and your team has been killing it on floor, but everything's not being scored 1-1. I mean, you know, if you're down 4-2 or whatever it is, you know that you need to hit your floor and beat the other guy on floor.
Wow. It'd be crazy that suspense could build in the middle of a gymnastics meet. Huh? Wouldn't that be nuts? Like, and that's the thing. Like, there would be moments of like, this is a doer, this is a must hit situation. And so, you know, the big issue was there's a finite amount of routines, right? So that's where that was the lockdown was like, you could get to the fourth event. And if one team won every point, the first score halfway through the meet after halfway through the meet is in. So you got 30 points. Sure. Once one team gets 16 points, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And so my suggestion was you run four quarters, four up on each event. And a quarter is one head-to-head matchup on each event. Floor, pommel horse, rings, vault, parallel bars, high bar. Boom. Scores 3-3. This is a great matchup. Go in next. Floor, horse, rings, vault, parallel bars, high bar. So you get a taste of everything. You know, it's exciting. And then if the meet ends at, you know, like, here's my thing. If the meet ends that early, then one team should have been throwing their better guys up early, right? There's actually a strategy to the coach, that how he manages his lineup, how he manages his team, right? And that, I loved that, right? Like, cause you know what I do as a coach now, when I go to a meet, I just try to make sure my guys' heads don't go AWOL and they just kind of stay in the zone. Like there's no strategy at the meet for a coach at all.
Right. Well, and I'll also say too, that like, as someone who, if you're getting really into a meet, it can also be really frustrating when you're watching it on TV, because they'll cut and you'll miss full routines. You'll miss full high bar routines, whatever. So if you're like really trying to follow an event, and even if it's just one event that you really care about, it's really painful to watch if they cut to a rings or cut to a floor when you're not there for that. So it would, having more diversity of what you're seeing, as opposed to just kind of seeing the same event over and over and waiting for the scoring. I think you're right. That's such a simple way to, the scoring you're talking about is sure, it's a drastic change, but in terms of the events themselves, it's so much more exciting to be engaged in that way. So that's you've won me over. I have absolutely no power in anything anywhere close to gymnastics, but if you ever need a letter of support from just some random guy,
you can sign that too, Dan, random guy.
There you go. I'm sure if you can't get through to him, I'm sure I can. That's absolutely.
And it made it more of a team sport too, you know, because you got, you know, when Sam Mikulik, two-time Olympian Sam Mikulik, was competing for Michigan, like, he was so good. He carried Michigan to, you know, to two national championships. And so by reducing his open-ended score of what he could score, 16, right? When some of the other best guys in the country could only score maybe a 14-8 or a 15 if they were at their best, he scores a point ahead of them. Like, meets are won and lost by tenths. So this guy, you know, was towing the line for this entire program. When you, using this system, he's only worth 1 point on each event.
Right.
So it kind of levels the playing field, you know, and I really like that. For one, it makes it more of a team. My first guy up, he's as important as my best guy.
Right. Yeah.
Do that one event, but like, it's all about getting those individual wins. And that's where I think it makes it more of a team thing, which that's what college athletics is to me. It's all about the team. So I actually liked that part of this.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, it adds so much depth. One, for the fact that you then all of a sudden have to have so much more depth on your team to be able to be more consistent. You can't rely on a star like that. And so, I mean, that just makes everything that much more competitive, because I mean, even if you're dominant, you're not able to kind of skate by. You're going to be that much more motivated to keep sharp on everything to help your team, get your team up to snuff. It's all, like I said, you've got this novice fan is ready to see these changes. So what I'm hearing is a promise from you.
But I'm going to get it done. Oh my God.
That's what I heard.
I still push it. You know, we actually ran a demo of it against Minnesota on the Big Ten Network. And it was just with the old format. So it ran super long, and we weren't able to do it in the way that we wanted to, because I think four count is the best format. That makes our team a little bit more nimble, less heavy on the Title IX numbers, actually a little bit more cost effective from travel size squad and just man our roster in general. So, but it didn't, I don't know. It's been a 10-year battle. We basically still have the same format we've had for the last 15 years. So bravo to us.
Hey, well, you know, you at least your voice in the room, keep fighting the good fight. Gotta do something. Cause I mean, as you say, it's really scary to see how quickly these things can vanish. And then it's really hard to capture that back and to convince something to come back from the dead is just not likely. But I do want to, again, just thank you so much for your time and talking with us. Is there anything else, gymnastics or otherwise, that you're just really want to get out into the ethos and get some attention to, whether it's things going on related to COVID or just the future of the sport or how people can get involved? What's your message?
I don't know. If you want to save current men's gymnastics, we just need people to be more vocal. You know, I think, you know, if you can't be a revenue generating sport in college system right now, your only other leverage is social significance. We need to engage fans. We need to get people, make our events a little bit more seen, blogs like that. That's why I don't ever say no to things like this. Anytime I can get the word out about college men's gymnastics, I want to do it because we have to, or else we're going to continue to die. Moving forward, when this whole thing collapses, which I think it will sometime in the not so distant future, not to be so damn dismal about it, but just being real, we're going to need sponsorships because we're going to need ways to kind of continue young men's dreams. When the college system isn't around anymore, we're going to need a whole new format is going to have to bubble up and figure out a way to continue to have opportunities for 18 to 24 year olds as they're entering their prime to continue to train. Because like myself, if I didn't get a scholarship to the University of Illinois, I was on the junior national team, but I don't know that I would have put my life on hold to bet on Olympic Games 6 years down the road, right? Like I just don't know. And we can't have that, or else we're going to just keep getting destroyed on the Olympic floor in men's gymnastics.
Right. Absolutely. And that's just another, I guess, kind of big question that I have for you is, I mean, you look at the dominance of our women's team. What is the breakdown of being able to capture the same sort of just even the precision and the consistency with the routines that we don't seem to have with the men's team?
In my belief, I think you have an unbelievable feeder pool. You know, women's artistic gymnastics is like 80% of USA gymnastics, maybe more. I actually might be undercutting them. So all other concentrations, all of men's and women's trampoline, all of men's and women's acrobatic, rhythmic gymnastics, tumbling, all of that, men's artistic gymnastics is the other 20%, all of it. So women's gymnastics is massive here. So, we're the premier country for supporting female athletes. Mm-hmm. So you've got that in combination with, it's still really cool for girls to do gymnastics. It's like one of their preferred sports, right? Whereas it's not for men.
Sure.
We're like strong arm. We're trying to lure them in with like Ninja Warrior, like come in and try. And maybe if you're good, you'll get bored and then you'll try pommel horse. We've lost our cool. Like it's just not cool. We lost our attitude. We need more Blaine Wilsons in our sport. You know what I mean? He was the bad boy of gymnastics. That was the best thing that could have happened for men's gymnastics in the United States. And we've only gotten further down the road of love UFC fighting and we love football and we love, my one metaphor, and I'll leave you with this, is men's gymnastics used to be like take-home chemistry set, right? It was like everyone loved it. Everyone thought it was cool. You studied it in high school and it sucked. But like, you know, if you had to do like structured tumbling or whatever, but like at home, like whipping back handsprings and, you know, front flips on the trampoline, that was for everyone. Everyone sure. loved that. And that wasn't that far from what the best in the world were doing. Mm. So like you were there. Now it's like, oh, do you want to spend 12 years and then you'll maybe be ready to compete with the bottom 50%? Come to men's gymnastics, right? So now where we're at and the sport's gone so crazy, now we're like astrophysics. No one's buying an astrophysics take-home set. Like you can't do that. Like it's quantum. It's too big. It's not simple. It's not fun. It's too cumbersome. Like, we lost our simplicity. We lost our relatability. And, you know, that's why you're seeing Ninja Warrior so popular. Because what is it? Just run this damn obstacle course. Hopefully you make it. Good luck.
And yeah, it's quick. That. It's stimulating. It's you My see parents the things.
Love watching it. You know what? I love exactly. watching it. I love doing it. I'm 36 and I love doing it. 36-year-olds, 40-year-olds are starting their means of working out as a Ninja Warrior. There's not a 50-year-old that's like, hey, you know, I'm gonna try vault tomorrow. Like, that's not happening. Like, well, it's one in a million, right? Like, it just right. That's why CrossFit has become popular. They took the one part from like the rings, ring strength. So like,
sure.
there are elements of gymnastics that are very cool, and we've made them so complicated and so artistic. It's so mathematical. We got to get back to our roots. I think we got to get more simple, more fun, more appealing to the masses. And that the problem with that is then it doesn't start to look like gymnastics again. Like, I think vault should be like for distance or for height.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Run down the vault and hurl your body 12 feet down and be like, damn, Olympians are going 18 feet. Like, I'm not that far. Like, I'm in there, baby. Let's go. Like, that's the type of change. I think that you want gymnastics to stay viable. That's what you need to make. That's what you need to bring back.
Right. And that's something that you can readily understand. You can understand that jump is higher than the other jump. That's easier to understand as opposed to why a deduction happened because the legs flew open a little bit while they were rotating.
Yeah. Now these wackos are doing like triple, double twisting, double backs off of vault. Like, people are just like, I don't know what that was. That was kind of cool. I don't know though. Like,
right. Well, and especially watching it on TV, it happens so fast. You can't distinguish one vault from the next.
It's too complicated to appreciate by the normal person.
Yeah, no, that's a great analogy. And that's a great perspective from someone who has obviously done it on the highest stage there is. So again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Dan. Appreciate
talking about men's gymnastics. It's something that I love, and again, longtime fan of yours. Just great to chat with you a bit. So, is there anything you want to plug? Do you have any sort of camps? I know.
We do summer camps, but I don't know. It's COVID, so I don't know.
Right, I was gonna say. Yeah.
Through our live streams, you know, Illinois, we are starting our comp season. We go up. Our first Big Ten matchup is at home against Ohio State in 2 weekends. So, like, just tune in, watch a college meet. There are some beautiful pieces to what we do. Don't try to follow the score unless you're kind of awkward, but like it's something unique. It's something different. Give it a shot. And I think you'll find something that maybe you like and come back for, you know, that's all I ask is give that a shot. And you can, you know, tune into our Twitter page or Instagram feed. We actually do some really funny, engaging stuff on our social media. So, you know, check us out at Illini M as in men's gym, Illini M gym. So, yeah, I don't know. Just give us a follow. That's all I could ask. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, how I hate Ohio State.
Amen.
Go Illini. Go Illini. All right. Thanks again, Justin. And thank you all for listening. It's been another great week at Dan's Dabble and Babble.